It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to welcome two eminent reporters online. First of all, Philip Manning, news director for KTNA in Talkeetna.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
And on the other line, the eminent reporter Zaz Hollander from the Anchorage Daily News.
Hey, Mike, I think eminent is another word for old, but I'll take it.
Right.
And we are joined in the studio by that eminent man about town, Mark Kelsey. To begin with, let's turn to Philip and his comments and observations about the newly selected Alaska senator from the Talkeetna area and beyond.
Mike Schauer was sworn in on Monday, and I got the chance to talk with him a couple of days ago. We'll have a story up on KTNA before the weekend. And my initial take on him is, one, he's very nice person to talk to. His role right now in his mind is very much kind of playing catch up and getting up to speed, because, I mean, you're talking about very much a Juneau outsider here. The way he put it to me was that he had kind of been behind the scenes in the shadows supporting candidates and things like that, but he did not expect that he would end up in the seat that he's in right now. In fact, he told me that if someone had said a month ago that he was going to be a sitting state senator, he would have laughed at them. So he's very much playing the catch-up game right now.
And what kind of support does he have in his office?
Right. You know, he's got as far as I'm aware, he's got one staffer. Of course, you know, a lot of the time staff allocations, things like that have to do with caucus membership. And I spoke with him about that, and he said he's not in a position right now to decide whether or not he's going to be joining the Republican-led majority caucus in the Senate, that he'll make a decision on that in the coming weeks. But, you know, his predecessor, Mike Dunleavy, was a part of that caucus and then left, as did Senator Hughes. And so that's something that's very much on his mind right now, is whether or not he is in a position where he wants to commit to things like the budget vote that members of the majority are kind of bound to.
There is, of course, the commitment factor question about whether he would be committed to running in the fall. He did take, I understand, a leave of absence from his job as a FedEx pilot.
That's correct. I asked that question as well, and the answer again was he doesn't know yet. He's going to give it. He said, you know, in a month or so, he'll probably have a decision on whether or not he's going to try to retain that seat in the August primary and then, of course, the November general. But as of right now, he's seeing if Juneau's the kind of place where he wants to be, because, yeah, he is taking a leave of absence from his career, his second career, after 20 years in the military. You know, he said he needs he and his family need to make a decision on whether or not staying in Juneau and trying to keep that seat are going to be something that's going to work for them.
Meanwhile, Governor Walker has appointed Tiffany Zolkowski of Bethel to replace Democrat Zach Fansler in the Alaska House. Zolkowski is a former mayor of Bethel, vice president of communications for the Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation, and House Democrats recently approved her appointment. Anyone have information about her and what's likely to happen when she arrives in her House seat?
I am unfamiliar with her.
I don't have any information on that. I find it interesting that this kind of crazy political process in which Dunleavy's replacement was named and named and named, it kind of resulted in, at least on paper, someone who, you know, is a citizen legislator who does potentially represent the people within his district, but because it came off sort of suddenly, you know, he's kind of scrambling to get staff together and take leave of absence from his job, and it'll be, and certainly if he chooses to run for that office, it'll be a bit of a horse race. And meanwhile, former Senator Dunleavy apparently is touring the state on his gubernatorial bid.
Right. So we're looking at changes in the Alaska State Legislature, and given that in the past, on occasion, one vote can make a big difference, it'll be interesting just how quickly these two new individuals will be able to catch up and do something that contributes to solving the budget deficit, among other things.
Did Schauer join the majority?
He is not, as of yet.
How about people in general in the Talkeetna area in terms of any reaction or feedback or sense of this choice Have people had enough time to know him, or do people know him enough to be able to say whether this seems to be good or bad?
You know, at this point, I think he's still a bit of an unknown to the folks, at least at this end of the valley. And that was one of the reasons I really wanted to get a chance to talk to him in his first week, to kind of give the folks up here an opportunity to kind of get to know, at least in the broad strokes, you know, what Senator Schauer is going to, you know, what can be expected of him while he's in office. And he didn't get into specifics because he's still kind of formulating a lot of those positions. But he did tell me a couple of things. He said, he would prefer that there were no taxes, no additional taxes. He wants to preserve the permanent fund dividend. And other than that, he said that the big focus, based on what's been going on in the valley, for him is likely to be crime. So those are the three things that right now he said he really wants to put some effort into figuring out and working toward a solution for.
Well, those are certainly safe positions for anyone to stake out in this district. I'm curious, though, back to, so is he automatically a part of the minority, or does he have to formally say, I will join the minority?
He's kind of in the position that Senator Dunleavy was in and that Senator Hughes is in, where they're a caucus of one, effectively,
right. Okay.
Until he makes a decision.
Makes sense.
Okay. All right. Well, this will be interesting as time rolls on. The state legislature has been taking up a variety of topics. One that still lingers out there, and I do not remember seeing a discussion of where it's going, but the idea of completing a discussion of funding for education early on. Any rumblings at all about that any of you have noticed?
There's certainly a lot of rumblings. I don't know if there's enough to get it over the hump. There seems to be a willingness among the status quo folks to, you know, keep that sort of a political football for the end of session. I'm not confident it will be fixed.
I do know that locally here at the Metsu Borough level, the last meeting where there was some discussion about how there would be a change for funding from the borough, the mayor in particular floated a percentage deal that seems to have a potential for traction. There were a couple of assembly people, one new assembly member, Ted Leonard, who supported taking a look at it as a way of both rationalizing and evening out the way in which funding was provided from the borough to education. Philip, did you or Zaz, either one of you, see that proposal or have any sense of a reaction to it?
I'm not familiar with it.
Okay.
I listened into the meeting. I haven't seen the actual proposal in detail, but I did listen in on some of that discussion on Tuesday night, and it'll be interesting to see what people do. I mean, I think there were some good questions brought up as far as, you know, whether 6.25 mils, I think, is the
is
the number that was being floated to go to education, and I think the school district had some questions about that, like, is that going to be the cap on what they can ever get, and then there were, you know, things like pointing out that in the other, quote, you know, what are called the Big Five, the other large school districts, that there's a bit more diversity in their funding. You know, in Anchorage, you've got more money coming from the feds because of the amount of federal property there, and of course the military bases. Juneau and Kenai have sales taxes, and so there's other factors at play. Whereas in the Mat-Su, without a major commercial tax base, anytime you're talking about increasing funding for the schools as it stands right now, that's going on to the property taxpayer.
Right. And, of course, there's another little piece off to the side I will mention, and that is, if you have driven into Anchorage recently, as of the 1st of March, you may have noticed suddenly there was a 10-cent per gallon jump in the price you were paying for fuel. That was something that was passed a while ago. And Mayor Berkowitz in Anchorage has said this is one way of reducing the burden on property owners. And I think the pushback was not big enough to stop it. It's going on. It's noticeable, but I'm not sure I would notice if I were there that I would go in and it would be 10, since the price fluctuates so much. But this is one of the ways that the city of Anchorage has gone about figuring a way to take a little bit of the pressure off property owners. Of course, I have never heard anything like that discussed here in the Matsu Valley. Well, let's shift to something that is about to happen, and that is, of course, the start of the Iditarod. Philip, I know you have enjoyed being out and watch dog races begin. Will you be in attendance at this one, since it's going to be a Willow Start?
Yes, actually, I'm very excited that it's going to be a Willow Start this year. I'll be down in Anchorage and Willow for the start, as will our other reporter, Katie Ryder, will be there with me as well, and likely be doing at least a little bit of social media live streaming. So, and then, of course, the regular interviews and pictures and all that sort of thing. But it is just an awful lot of fun to be down there for that.
And what's the word on trail conditions?
Last word I heard was good, even including the Dalles Elk Gorge, that the gorge is in better shape than it's been in a long time. Of course, then you know things like the Farewell Burn are always going to be a bit of a trial for the mushers. But overall, at least in South Central and the interior, trail conditions are good. One question I had that I haven't had answered yet is looking out west with the great diminishment in sea ice this winter.
Right.
If they're going to be able to run along the coast. And I was told that by Anya Rodano, the rookie from Talkeetna, that she said she's not sure, she hasn't been told about that yet, but that she knows they do have kind of bypasses where you can run inland.
So I'm wondering whether any of you have ever gone along the sea ice there off the coast of Nome going south, as I have. I just throw that out. I've been on a snow machine, not on a dog sled, and it is one wild ride because it's flat and easy and, of course, also exposed to the wind. So if you take that away, you're putting toward the end of the race a considerably different experience than people as they're approaching Nome. Okay, how many mushers are there in the Talkeetna area?
One from Talkeetna proper, and it's the first time we've had a musher from Talkeetna in a couple of years. Jerry Souza has taken the last couple of years off, and last I heard from him is that he's got some young dogs right now, so we might see him again. But then, of course, you've got Willow, and there are scads of mushers in Willow.
Right, exactly, right, okay.
And is anybody talking about the overall size of the field, why it's down, will it ever be up again?
There's a lot of speculation on that, and of course, the recent controversy certainly hasn't helped as far as that goes.
For sure.
Okay. I guess my question to all of the panelists, as you're looking toward the Iditarod, and you've all had the experience of noticing it over time, what is your sense of your own personal interest or excitement toward this Iditarod? I have been at other starts. I probably won't be at this one. Zaz, where do you sit, or where does your family sit in relationship to the Iditarod?
Well, my girls are always excited about Iditarod. This is the biggest Iditarod I'll ever cover, I think. The fact that the trail conditions are good, except for maybe out on the coast, is it kind of stands in stark contrast to this incredible turmoil that the race is under. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, there have been complaints over the decades about dog abuse and dog treatment, but this is the first time in however many, 40-some-odd years, 46 years, I think, that there will be actual active protests.
Oh, wow.
In Anchorage, in Willow, and in Nome, at least that's the promise from PETA. There may be other groups protesting. You know, I think that the race, as it's gotten faster, you know, an eight-day Iditarod was not in the cards when, you know, three guys planned out the first one in the 70s. It was supposed to be a one-year thing. And the fact that it's gotten this fast is prompting, so I think, some real soul-searching, maybe even on the board that runs policy for the race. You know, you've got mutinies among some of the mushers, this quote-unquote doping scandal under which Dallas CV is in Norway to compete in a different race. John Baker isn't competing. But, you know, in the midst of all that, you've got a really, really good race setting up. Nick Petit has been just winning everything, and he's got a Willow connection, although he's based out of Girdwood. And, I mean, it could be a really interesting race. Dee Dee Genre, it's her last race. So I think there'll be some really good stories once they get out on the trail. I get the sense that for most mushers, they just want to get out there and get away from not only the city, which is, I think, kind of a hassle for everybody, but just get out from underneath that cloud.
Well, and to your point about possible change in thinking about the race, you even see now an old school veteran like John Schandelmeyer suggesting maybe it's time to slow the race down. But I think
he's not alone.
Right.
And he's taking a lot of heat for it.
Well, and that's, I think it's significant coming from an old school guy, because that sort of attitude is more, you know, more contemporary, I would say. But the flip side of that is the increase in speed is that there's a lot that goes into that, not the least of which is how the dogs are bred. So we still need to remember that these folks are not out there, you know, driving dogs beyond their means. There's also
I think there's a biological argument that, say, if you're mixing hound in there, that they may not be as hardy as certainly those original dogs that pulled serum with Sepala, that these dogs may not have that kind of endurance to get pushed so hard and so fast for 8 days, 10 days, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So, Philip, up there in Talkeetna, is there any substantial feeling that the Iditarod has exceeded its purpose?
You know, I'm not at this point that I've seen. Folks up here still get really excited about it because there's still a very long, you know, and proud mushing tradition. There's a lot of people with recreational dog teams up here. As far as, you know, talking about the speed of the race and things like that, we actually put up a story on Thursday. Katie Ryder did a story and brought up that exact question with Jeff King, and he pushed back pretty hard on the notion that, you know, the race being faster is bad for the dogs. I'm trying to find the exact quote here, but he points to things like improvements in the trail and improvements in technique and timing and in the breeding of the dogs and that sort of thing. At the same time, though, like y'all pointed out, I think there is a growing sentiment, and I'm trying to remember if it was maybe Charles Woolforth who wrote an op-ed that said, you know, that the writing may be on the wall for the Iditarod, and I'm not sure what that would mean for the state and for this area in particular.
I don't know that it necessarily means Iditarod goes away. I think it means a different race. You know, if I was a big race sponsor, I don't know that I would be less excited about a race that builds in some changes in response to the controversy. You know, it doesn't mean that it has to disappear. It just may be a different race.
Becomes a stage race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we're going to see it all unfold over the next probably 10 days, 14 days, until the last Red Lantern finishes. Philip, there's one other outdoors controversy that has emerged, and that is at the top of the mountain, or not quite at the top of the mountain, but close. It involves a certain hut that is up there. Any differences of opinion on one side of the other in Talkeetna about something which is very close to the history of Talkeetna?
There are some divisions of opinion on that up here.
Shocking.
Yeah, right. The Sheldon Chalet went up and is now open for business, is my understanding, or at least about to be. You know, a couple thousand square feet, or maybe 1,000 total, but right near the original mountain house that was built by Don and Roberta Sheldon, and it's being kind of managed and put together by two of their children, and the third, Holly, who still lives here in Talkeetna primarily, has been involved in a court battle with her brother Robert Sheldon for a few years now, and that has now gone to the Supreme Court regarding a settlement the family trust, after Roberta Sheldon passed away back in 2014. And so that's one of those things that I think a lot of locals knew that there was tension there, but now, of course, it's out there on the statewide stage, and I think a lot of other people are learning more and more about that as well. But yeah, there are definitely people who say, hey, you know, they own the property, let them build it, let them have it. I can tell you firsthand, it's a beautiful building. But there are also plenty of people who are like, you know, when you're flying up there, you know, for Glacier Landing, things like that, because that's where most of them go. Now you've got this much larger building right there in what used to be not untouched wilderness, because the old hut was there, but it's definitely a bigger part of the view shed now.
Mm-hmm. More a resort feeling than a mountain hut feeling.
Oh, for sure.
Right. Now, you said firsthand. Philip, have you been to the site?
I have been there. When they were, this would have been last year, they invited some reporters up there. I went up there. Some folks from Channel 11 went up there to see it and take pictures and talk about the construction of it. And the position of Robert and Kate Sheldon is that, you know, that this larger building was Robert or was Don Sheldon's plan all along. They said they found Robert's wife found some plans while they were going through Roberta's things from, you know, 40 plus years ago that had blueprints essentially for a building much like the one that ultimately got built. So that's part of the back and forth as well. Of course, we can no longer ask Roberta what she would think about it, but and she was well known in this area for being very vocal on a lot of issues. So as of right now, it's a bit of a controversy still up here for sure.
Okay. Well, I hope one day to be able to go up and also see and make a comparison. That would be an interesting thing. I'm curious, of course, how many people are we talking about that will actually go up there in a year?
That's hard to say. I mean, their maximum capacity, they've got 5 guest rooms there.
Oh.
So fewer than a dozen at full capacity, and there is quite the price tag attached to staying up there too. My understanding is $2,300 per night with a minimum stay of a couple of nights.
Oh.
So this is a very, very high end. They're targeting the very, very high end market here.
Okay. Well, let's switch to another controversial topic that is emerged after the horrific events in a school in Florida. And that is controversies swirling around guns. And we've had all three of the congressional delegation to Washington speak in one way or another about it. The two senators, Dan Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski, as well as Representative Don Young, expressing different opinions about what could or should be done. I've been interested in noting that there are a number of large outlets, Walmart, REI, et cetera, that have taken various positions in terms of changing their sales policies for weapons that are sold and the rest of it. And I'm curious, Zaz, have you come across any further details about that or reactions?
No, I haven't been looking that closely at that. It does seem like school walkouts, at least here,
oh, yes,
getting some attention. The Palmer High School planned walkout, I think, because there's so much advance notice, is generating a lot of controversy.
Okay, Mark?
I agree with you. It is very significant to see these bigger companies, you know, sort of leading the way while Congress sits around and talks in these days of where corporations are easy targets after the Citizens United court case. Especially, it's good to see civic responsibility and, you know, having these big companies lead the way. Mike, I think he said Walmart and
okay.
REI,
right?
Also significant.
Fred Meyer, yeah.
And Fred Meyer
and Dick's Sporting Goods. So, yeah, very significant. I think it shows, above all, that the way we think about these gun issues is definitely changing.
Philip, anything from Chuck Eaton?
I haven't talked to anybody who said whether or not they're going to boycott Walmart and Fred Meyer,
okay.
Which would be difficult for folks buying groceries coming from the Upper Valley here.
All right.
But, yeah, it's definitely generated a lot of a social media firestorm, that's for sure. I was a little taken aback. I mean, when I saw, you know, that Dick's had put that out, of course, in their main stores, they had already stopped selling firearms, or at least some types of firearms. This tends to, I forget what other brand of store they own, but this is more impacts that store. And they took, I think, the biggest step. But then, yeah, you've got Walmart saying they're not going to sell firearms or ammunition to people under 21. And Walmart, if you want to, you know, take the pulse of the retail market, I can't think of anywhere to start other than Walmart.
Right. Okay. Well, let's take the pulse of something else, and that is the political a game that it is March after all, and I've been sort of waiting to see more energy in preparations leading up toward the fall elections. I noted one thing, and that was that the governor of Alaska, Governor Walker, has apparently looked beyond Alaska to join in a kind of a coordination with other independent political leaders in Congress and other states, because, as is well known, he's an independent. And as a result, presumably would not be receiving a lot of support from either a Republican or Democratic large groups. And I thought that was an interesting interesting approach, and is another signal of some changes that perhaps are going along nationwide that spill over into Alaska. Any reaction to that?
Well, as a nonpartisan voter, I'm encouraged anytime I see that kind of activity. We are way too tribalized, and that kind of atmosphere, I think, has opened up a vacuum in the middle, and it's good to see that our governor is part of that movement.
Okay, Philip.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where when you're in a high position like that as an independent, you've got to do something in order to kind of keep up with the Joneses when it comes to those, you know, other big parties. Of course, Walker has Byron Mallott, who's, of course, more closely aligned with the Democratic Party. So there's something there, but you know, you've got to take help where you can get it in this environment.
Zaz?
Yeah, Philip took the words right out of my mouth. I think that the governor needs all the help he can get, given some of the polls we're seeing.
Okay, so as we're coming toward the end of this edition of Valley Edition, I'd like to just take a little poll here and see. Zaz, are you following? Do you see some stories coming up that we have missed at this point that are worth our attention?
Well, I've had my head in mostly Anchorage-based breaking news this week. There is, on the education front, it sounds as if the teachers union, the school district, have a ratified contract now.
Right.
So going ahead, that'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. I've heard kind of mixed reactions from teachers within the district, some of whom are shocked and others who are, well, you know, it's not that bad. So the funding mechanism, as you discussed earlier, will be interesting to watch.
Okay.
And budget.
Yeah. And
overall.
Yeah. And Philip, up there in Talkeetna, have we missed some other topics that are topics of discussion?
You know, for my part, I've been largely focusing on getting ready for the Iditarod in the past week or so. And then, of course, the new senator. I think those are two of the biggest things that are going to be impacting this area, at least in the next week or so.
Well, with the exception, perhaps, of snow. We had a lot of snow come down here. How does that turn out up there in Talkeetna?
Oh, the snow machiners are very happy up here.
Well, I had a report from Ed Strabel, who's king of the groomers, and he has been over most trails. He gave an update this morning and pointed out that, this is... For anyone who is interested in outdoor sports, whether skis or snow machines or whatever, yes, there is snow and more coming. We understand next week that there are a couple of days where there'll be 3 to 5 inches more. So even though we've had a slow start to the winter, it looks as if we are at that place where things are looking wintry. And of course, with the added light that's out there, not only for the Iditarod, but for anyone who's going to be outside, looks like a good time. Mark, any other topics?
Nope.
Okay. Well, then I want to thank Mark Kelsey for coming into the studio. Thank you, Mark.
Always good to be here.
And I want to thank Philip Manning for calling in from Talkeetna. Thank you, Philip.
Always a pleasure.
And I want to thank Zaz Hollander for taking time to call in also. Thank you, Zaz.
Yep, sure thing. March is the best month of winter here.
Yeah, we've got it. Okay, well, next week we'll be back for another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.